Good morning, diners and travelers. You're listening to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig. And today we've got Peru Part Dos.
And it's not just Peru Part Dos, it's Mistura Part Dos, and it's the Culinary Symposium Dos, and a cast of characters who are some of the world's greatest chefs who we had the opportunity to talk to. Just in some cases briefly, in other cases with a little bit more time, in the auditorium. So forgive the background noise. There's some background music. There are some
and
voices.
And forgive my voice. If I get to say a word, it'll sound like a croak.
You're in there.
Yeah, but I was croaking because I had lost my voice.
But we've got an absolutely action-packed program today. And starting out, one of our favorite human beings, one of our favorite chefs, and the top 50 restaurants in the world thought he was so good, he placed number 3. So Massimo Bottura from Osteria Francescana in Modena, he's not just a chef, he's also a philosopher. Listeners, Massimo Bottura is one of On the Menu's favorite people on the entire planet Earth. And we have caught up with him again at Mistura in Lima. We just found out that Massimo has been here every time this event has been held, from the very first tiny beginnings until today, when it's massively crowded and every chef in the world you would want to know is here. And Massimo spoke to an audience that was spellbound. I watched them because he had a message that didn't sound at all like food. It was a message about life. Just going to hand over the microphone, and I'm going to say, Massimo, please tell us what the real message of you were giving today was, and what you think you're going to take home from this conference as a result of delivering that message.
Hi, everyone. This is Massimo Bottura from Osteria Francescana in Modena, Italy. The land of the fast cars and the slow food. So, the compressed message, like my compression of pasta and beans. The first, I think the most important thing is, like, of my message is to the younger chef, to the younger people, they have a dream. They have a dream, and I said, you have to write and to ask yourself the right question. Because if you don't know who you are and where you come from, you cannot project yourself into the future. The second message is, like, part of our culture is, and it's like, yeah, it's very important to be local, but us, like Italian, we became like this because of contamination, because we were a country of people, they were traveling, and they were bringing back so many different things and emotions and culture. So, and then we exported back again, like we did with Peru. The potato came in 1535 and stabilized in Europe. But when the emigrants from Liguria, they left massive for Peru, they bring to this country not just the dream to have a better life, but also a bag full of flavors, like tomato, potato, and all the Mediterranean flavor. So my message is, don't close the door to a wise contamination, because a wise contamination makes you evolve and be a better man. The third message is, like, the way you approach to culture. When you have you're not able to express yourself through culture, is like you do things that are not deep and solid. But when you read, when you study, when you get deep into your interest, these interests, one day they're going to be passion. And through the passion, you can transfer emotion. What I'm going to bring back to Italy, I'm going to bring back this experience being in the middle of these people smiling in a moment like this, in which Europe is so sad and like wrapped in an incredible crisis. You know, I'm bringing back some smiling people that is like the spirit of the joy of hope for the better future. And what I expect, I seen this Latin American in the last 6 years growing so much. And of course, they have a lot of walking to do, but they are on the right path. The most important thing is not close themselves into too much local, because too much local for us has been very bad. You know, in my historic memory, I think about when we were too local and when we were too proud of ourselves, the fascist regime came out to Italy. But I think a wise contamination can be the perfect way to express yourself and project into the future. Look at the past in a critic way, not in a nostalgic way, to bring back, to bring to the future the best part of yourself.
And you will undoubtedly be back next year, but Anne has a question.
Not sure exactly how all the techniques and ingredients used by the Latin American chefs can translate to any place else in the world. Do you see anything like that? There's no potato to be transmitted because we already have them. There's no tomato, we have them. Are the Amazon products going to be useful in other cultures? And also, how do we avoid destroying the culture that created these, the Amazonian culture?
I think in the future, I see a more future. And, you know, it won't be a potato, but the potato, when it came to Europe, found the perfect soil. And the tomato, when they arrived, they found the perfect sun. And they became part of our culture as some spices. And I see in Italy, I see now that we are opening to other different culture of the Middle Eastern, the people, they are like escaping from Africa. And they bring their own product. And I see products in the market of Modena, that is the most traditional place in Italy, the market of Modena, that is evolving. And we are evolving, and the tortellino is evolving through the wise contamination, and the broth for the tortellino is evolving. Because I know, I seen Yoji, my second in the kitchen, that is from Japan, and he has the culture of umami with bringing alga and seaweed kombu and put it into the broth with all these different animals, from the duck to the veal, to the guinea hen, to the veal, to the pork, to the frog, to the eel. And at the end, a seaweed gives the balance to everything. So the contamination gets the balance to everything. It's like this. It's just the way to find the right approach. 5 years ago, back to South America, I was in Brazil in a conference. I said, you have amazing product, but you know, you don't know how to preserve that. They have to improve the way they keep all this kind of product. We create cooperative world. You know, all these small producers, farmers, cheesemakers, they get together and they became big and important, and they start exporting. I would be very interesting to use and to see if a great product from Amazon came to Italy and see how I can match into my cuisine. But, you know, if till the moment they don't find a way to protect their product and to protect their community, they won't be able to export.
There's a great deal of excitement around rising stars here. Again, I apologize for my voice. Young chefs starting out and discovering, is there a group of rising star young chefs in Italy working outside of your established traditions?
I think in this moment we have a very interesting movement in Italy. These are a generation between 25 and 35. They saw us, that we already broke all these walls, and we already said, guys, we have to look at the tradition in a very critic way, because sometimes the tradition, they don't respect the ingredients. So we need to break the tradition and build new tradition. They're going to evolve with us into the future. So there is just this generation that is coming out that is like so into local with a global mind. It's amazing. And this is a very, I feel there's a very bright future. I hope, you know, also in a politic way, is going to be a big change for our country, because we really need a big change to raise and be Italy again.
And more fascinating chefs right after the break.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Next up, two of Spain's rather more famous young chefs, Antoni Aduritz from Mugaritz.
Another philosopher.
Yeah, and ranked number four in the world. And in conversation with Albert Adria, who's...
has four new restaurants in Barcelona.
Well, you'll get the story of the different status of the different restaurants in the interview itself. And we corralled Jose Andres, who's, of course, well-known here in the United States, as well as all over the world, for that matter.
He's the interpreter of Spanish cuisine for the rest of the universe, particularly the United States.
And later in the program, he has his own interview. But I managed to corral him and take advantage of the fact that he could help me to translate with Antoni and Albert, although they actually managed a little bit of English themselves as well. And, of course, I'm Spanish challenged. So thanks to Jose Andres, here we have Antoni and Albert. Peter is surrounded by culinary fame. We cornered Jose Andres, and Jose Andres is going to have an unusual role because he's going to be a translator from English to Spanish and Spanish to English. On my left is Albert Adria, the slightly less famous member of his cooking family, but who's now creating an empire of his own. And on my right, I think the number four restaurant in the world, according to the Top 50 Restaurant Awards, Antoni Luis Aduritz from Mugaritz in Spain. And we have interviewed him before at his restaurant. But we're out of their traditional setting now and doing something different, doing something for themselves, but also doing something for the world chef community. Because we're at Mistura and we're at the Culinary Symposium, where these gentlemen are providing their ideas to an audience of people who are gathering that information to use to advance their careers. But my first question then is why? Why would you come all the way to Lima, Peru from Spain? There must be something special going through your mind.
Bueno, yo esta ya es mi tercera participación en Mistura. La primera vez no tenía ninguna información prácticamente de Perú, sabía que empezaba a pasar algo aquí, pero en cuanto vine me enamoré de la cocina peruana, me enamoré de todo lo que está pasando aquí a nivel gastronómico. Ahí tiene que traducir José Andrés, perdón.
It's my third presentation here in Mistura. Since the first time I arrived, I fell in love with Peru, I fell in love with Mistura. And, you know, any time they call me, I always come back. I belong to Mistura. I love it here.
Is it the people? Is it the ingredients? Is it the cooking that you find here? Which of those things is it?
Pues precisamente es todo ese conjunto que hace que algo que es una necesidad que es comer se convierta en una pasión. Esta conjugación de factores lo que me hace envolver. Aquí la gente ama la gastronomía y se ve claramente en congreso como Mistura.
It's a mix of everything you mentioned. Is that synergy between everything, the food, the culture, the history, that makes Mistura one of the most unique events in the history of mankind. And this is what keeps me coming back.
Antoni, can you answer this question again? Why come all the way from the Basque country in Spain to a country that used to be a colony of Spain but has not been for a very long time? What's here for you?
Bueno, al final cuando viajas ya sabes de primera mano que vas a ver una forma de estar el mundo y de interpretar la vida distinta a la tuya, y eso siempre es enriquecedor. Y bueno, yo siempre he tenido mucha curiosidad, y eso sí le añado que mi mujer siempre me está riñendo, pues tengo una buena excusa para escaparme siempre que puedo de casa.
Peru, it's really one of those places that really you feel like it's enriching you, because it's such a faraway world. It's something so close to us but so far away from us. And if on top of that, he feels his wife is always kind of on top of him, of why he's doing this and that wrong, it's a perfect excuse why to leave home and come to Peru. For him, it's something like really is enriching him beyond words. He's learning every second he's here.
Now something else is going on as well regarding your restaurants. It's going in the opposite direction. So we talked about what you find here, but the same thing is happening in the reverse direction. So because at lunch today, we had an appetizer course of stones and potatoes. Now, the last time I had stones and potatoes was at your restaurant, Mugaritz. And now someone here is doing the same thing.
Bueno, es increíble. No, la verdad, no, la verdad que es increíble ver cómo el mundo para algunas cosas está muy muy separado y para otras está muy, muy cercano, ¿no? Uno la verdad que siempre se sorprende de cosas que puede llegar a hacer, cómo pueden inspirar a otros. Pero lo cierto es que a mí lo que más me interesa es lo que yo puedo aprender. Yo soy una persona curiosa por naturaleza y lo que más me importa en este momento es intentar seguir creciendo, seguir inspirándome y desde luego Perú es un territorio virgen para ver ya no solo lo que hacen de forma desde hace muchos años, sino ver sobre todo la ilusión, la pasión que pone esta gente, que quizá para mí es lo más motivador.
Well, it's very important for him that his people here, maybe in Lima, maybe in Peru, that somehow are adapting techniques that himself and Donnie or other chefs in Spain may be using. This is very unique. But what is really important for Andoni is that when he comes here, every moment is an inspiration. Every product, every smell, every flavor, every technique. And that's one of the reasons for him to keep traveling and to keep visiting places like Peru, like Lima. It's very inspiring. You keep learning every second.
Y yo voy a poner un ejemplo práctico y conciso.
He's going to be putting a very practical and precise example.
Nosotros, después de 25 años dedicándonos a la investigación, en el buey y en el taller, teniendo pescados marinados tradicionales y clásicos, y después de estar tantos años pensando qué puedes hacer, no se te ocurre hacer un ceviche.
As the Adria brothers, after being more than 25 years researching new techniques, new ways of cooking. And obviously, after using every single fish, shellfish that you can be using from the sea, one of the things that comes to mind is, I will never ever dream of making a traditional Peruvian ceviche.
Hacemos los boquerones tradicionales y siempre son iguales. Es como el anticucho siempre es de corazón, coño, y en España el boquerón siempre es con vinagre y no se entiende nada más.
It's very funny because actually when he thinks about it, wow, we have boquerones en vinagre. Boquerones en vinagre is like the white bait or the smelt in vinegar. This is very traditional in Spain. But if it's with vinegar, it's acidity, it's like a Peruvian ceviche. So we are very far away, but at the same time, we are so close. Like the anticuchos, the skewers of heart that are marinated. Wow. We have things like that too, but we don't think that sometimes we are very equal and very similar instead of thinking that we are very far away from each other.
Ya está, ¿no? Me parece que es un buen ejemplo.
So I think this is a great example to see again that a ceviche and a boquerón en vinagre, the smelt in vinegar, they are two very distant, faraway dishes, but at the same time, they have almost the same characteristics. We are more equal than we think.
Before we conclude, listeners, you just have to know about what Andoni and Albert are doing when they're at home, because these are some of the most amazing culinary experiences you will ever have. So Andoni, first of all, tell our listeners just a little bit about your restaurant, Mugaritz, and what they can expect when they go there. We're telling them right now they should, but what are they going to find?
Bueno, yo le diría a la gente que si realmente les gusta la gastronomía y quieren ver una cosa distinta, pues que vengan a visitarnos. Al final nosotros...
If people are looking for something new, they love gastronomy, they love to eat, they love food, you know, you should come to see Andoni, you should come to eat at Mugaritz, because there you're going to be finding that very unique type of food that you're looking for.
Yo diría que nosotros no tratamos de ser los mejores, sino distintos. Y al final, el ser distinto es a veces la suficiente excusa como para atraer a alguien.
We're not trying to be the best. We're trying somehow to be different. And when somebody is trying to be different, and on top of that is good, that's enough of excuse of why you should visit them. In this case, why you should visit us.
Estoy muy contento de estar aquí.
I'm very happy to be here in this radio show and in Mistura.
I can tell you, listeners, he's being altogether too modest. This is one of the top four dining destinations in the world. So if you're interested in really good creative food, you don't have an excuse. It's not so far away that you can't find time to go there. Now, you also need to go to Barcelona, mm-hmm. where Albert has... I think at least two restaurants and some more that you are working on right now. So tell our listeners about those.
Yo le responderé de una manera muy sencilla. Yo no trabajo para que la gente venga, sino para que vuelva.
I don't work so people may come, but I work so people may return. That's the only thing that keeps me moving forward. And that's all I have to say today.
Have him tell our listeners what his restaurants are called. And the ones that exist and the ones he's planning.
So now I'm not only a translator, but now I'm José Andrés. And I can tell you that I know Albert and Ferran Adrià for more than 25 years. And one thing that makes them different to everybody else is that they've always been an open book. They always share every piece of information they develop and they had. And that makes them, especially Albert and obviously Ferran, some of the most unique people, because they have an open heart. And when you have an open heart and you are as good as they are, makes them a very, very unique type of people. So to me, they are the most unique chefs I know. The restaurant, Patka, it's kind of a window into the Nikkei food of Peru, where the traditional foods of Peru meet the traditional foods of Japan. And his other restaurant, Tickets, it's an homage to the best tapas that Spain has to offer. Great restaurants. If you are lucky enough to get a reservation, you will have one of the best experiences in your life. This is José Andrés, and I endorse this message.
There he goes. Now, I think he also has restaurants in the planning stages as well. Am I correct? So you have some new restaurants you are going to open?
Sí, espero... es que... Se me ha acabado el dinero, entonces a ver si conseguimos abrir el mexicano en enero y luego el nuevo 41 durante el año que viene.
Well, I have no more money left, so I'm trying to make sure that I come up with few extra dollars to open the Mexican restaurant and then to reopen 41, which is my very high-end kind of restaurant.
Now, we have Gaston Acurio just snuck in the back of this interview, but... It's really too late for people to make plans now to come to Gelinas tonight, but we will be there, and you will be cooking. I'm sure our listeners would be fascinated to know what you are doing with octopus in a cylinder.
Bueno, estamos encantadísimos de rendir un homenaje a un cocinero como Gastón. Más allá de la cena, más allá del pulpo al cilindro, es una excusa preciosa para hacer una fiesta en torno a su figura, y eso es lo importante, celebrar esta noche una fiesta y un homenaje a Gastón.
Well, I mean, for us it's very amazing to be going to Gelinas and be invited, being able to use different techniques, in this case to cook pulpo, and more especially to do the homage that Gastón Acurio deserves. He is really very much the heart that makes Peru Bite, Mistura Bite, and especially Gelinas tonight in honor of Gastón.
But what's the recipe going to be?
My recipe is bueno, yo estaba preocupado que con tanto pulpo esta noche se pueda acabar, entonces he hecho un pulpo vegetal, en un pulpo sin pulpo.
I was very worried that tonight with so much food, because it's going to be I don't know how many courses, the people will be very full. So octopus is the dish tonight, so I decide to make an octopus without octopus.
Okay, well, that's an interesting one. Mrs. Haig is at home taking a rest so that she will be ready for the event starting at 10 o'clock. Is Andoni cooking after 10 or before? Before 10. Well, in that case, we will miss that. So you must tell us what we missed.
Yo he hecho un pulpo pensando en que entrara entre los tres primeros para poder irme ir el primero, irme rápido.
I decided to make an octopus dish thinking that I was going to be one of the first three cooks, so I can be one of the first three cooks, first three chefs, to leave the event, because it's really a great event, but it's a crazy event.
Yo había pensado lo del postre, pero no quería quedarme el último.
I was thinking about doing the dessert, but I didn't want to be the last one doing a dish.
Ya está, eso.
So wait and see. I don't even know what I'm about to serve.
Now, Jose, are you cooking tonight?
I'm not cooking tonight. I've not been invited. I guess I don't have the level. I am not a three-star Michelin. I am not number four in the 50 best. I am just a poor chef with restaurants that only dream of one day being serving Albert Adrià and Andoni Aduriz. What Andoni is saying here is that the music we hear in the background is Gaston Acurio playing the mandolin. People of America listening to this show, come to Peru if you want to listen to the real music.
You guys are crazy. But thank you so much for talking to us. We appreciate it.
We are very serious. Explain sometimes. I'm sorry. But thanks so much. My pleasure.
Thank you very much.
So yes, there was some background music, as you undoubtedly noticed. We're going to go to break now, and then right after the break, an American connection, shall we say. And I'll explain that then.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Okay, so in our next segment, we're going to deal with the United States. Made us proud to have Daniel Hume and Will Gadara from 11 Madison Park in New York addressing the group, and we caught them afterwards. And then Jose Andres, who's well known throughout the United States as a great ambassador for Spanish food, and he had his own interview talking about what he thinks about Mistura and what he's taking home from it as well. So Daniel Hume and Will Gadara from...
Did they talk about their octopus hot dog?
Yes. Well, you'll get the context of the octopus hot dog if you listen to the interview, so let's just go to that. It seems we've come half a world away to meet someone who lives fairly close to On the Menu, because we're in Lima, Peru, talking to Will Gadara and Daniel Hume from a wonderful restaurant, fifth in the world, according to some, called 11 Madison Park in New York City. First of all, I guess I should say welcome to Lima, because we've been here 2 days longer than you have. I'm interested in why you chose to come all this way.
You know, these conferences, and there's only, you know, a few that we take the time to attend, but we find them to be really good opportunities. The community of chefs, the people that have really become friends of ours over the course of the last couple of years, to see them and connect with them and to hear what they're up to and to share ideas. But also, when you come and you hear other people present and you get to taste the cuisine, and especially here in Lima, which is doing some really exciting things right now. And then for us to be able to tell our story a little bit, to learn from others, and ideally, you know, some people can learn from us.
Daniel was very generous with sharing his life story and how he got to where he got to. It must be like living a dream.
You know, up to like 3 years ago, I never really traveled much. And even before I came to the U.S., I never been outside of Europe. And now sometimes I pinch myself and I'm like, wow, is this a dream? Because over the last few years I've been able to go to so many interesting places and see so many interesting cultures. I feel really blessed.
Are there some ingredients in Kila that you have come across for the first time here in Peru that you think you'll take back to 11 Madison Park?
You know, the thing of ingredients is it always has to be of the place. It always tastes better in the place, right? So here in Peru, they have these amazing, you know, I don't know, they have like 500 different types of potatoes, and they're incredible. But could you bring them back? Not really, you know, because we have our own things. And I think that's what makes traveling so interesting, to always try to find the things that make a place unique.
Now, Will, you're a man with great knowledge of wine, and Peru is a country that produces very little wine, but there are other things you can drink which are fun. Have you come across any of those yet?
I mean, we've only been here for a day, so not too much yet, although we've had some incredible pisco sours, and I actually intend to drink one of them after we're done talking to you. So,
one thing we came across that was interesting, and if you catch up with Chef Jaime from Maita, he serves unusual beverages, some of them non-alcoholic, but two of the courses he served with really fine artisanal beers. So I would encourage you while you're here to look for those, because they're equal to some of the best microbrews that are being brewed in the United States.
Yeah, no, we actually have had some great beers, and also we had a chance to have some chicha, a couple different types of chicha, and that, although that's not something that we would do in our restaurant because it's not, you know, it's clearly a thing from here, it inspires you to think a little bit differently in terms of what is possible to do with beverage, and that's been really fun for us as well.
Now, are you cooking in the group that's doing 25 different interpretations of octopus in a cylinder? Are you part of that, and what's your recipe going to be? This won't air until after the event is over, so we can keep a secret until then, but I'm interested in what you're choosing to do with something that might not exactly be a natural part of something you would cook.
No, you know, it's actually kind of an interesting concept. So it's a signature dish of Gaston, who is the, you know, the most famous chef of Peru. And we have these 22 or 24 chefs from all over the world here. And everyone is going to do a take on his recipe using the same ingredients. And actually, Will has helped me a lot, you know, because first you think like a chef and you think about the food that you would do in the restaurant using those ingredients. But then Will was saying, well, I think it should be a little bit more fun and a little bit more New York. So we're doing a hot dog of octopus on a potato bun.
That's great. Now, I'll let you into a little secret if you didn't catch this one. I think it can't be entirely a secret, but Magnus Nielsen from Sweden apparently usually brings his recipe in first, but he was almost the last because he was struggling to figure out what a new interpretation would be. So he's been feeding his staff octopus. He's consumed dozens and dozens and dozens of kilos of octopus and finally decided that his dish is going to be made only from the skin. So I'm sure you're going to have fun. We're hoping to catch up with you there, but if not, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us today. A final message for our listeners around the world.
Come visit us in New York.
Yeah, no, come visit us in New York and definitely come visit Lima.
It's really not all that threatening after all.
Huh? Yeah, not threatening at all. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you very much.
Really appreciate it.
That was awesome.
Once upon a time, there was a program called Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego? Well, now we're playing a game called Where in the World is Jose Andres, super chef in the United States, importer of fine food products from Spain. I don't know what he doesn't do, but he found time to come all the way to Peru for Mistura and the Chef's Congress. And we think you might like to know why he came all this way, what he's learning, what he's contributing, what he's expecting to find out.
Well, it's I ask myself the same question every time I go somewhere. And the truth is that we are invited here to Mistura to share with all the young Peruvians that are eager to learn more about cooking. So we come to share what we know. But the truth is that the reason I come to these things is to learn. So for me, if I don't see I'm going to learn something, I don't come. That's why I don't do a lot of congress. I prefer used to travel and to be part of the places. But in this case, I've been waiting many years to come to Peru. I'm a very good friend with some of the chefs, especially with Gaston. And I didn't want to wait any longer. So here I am, sharing a little bit who I am. But most important, learning a lot of new things.
Things you've already found out. You've been here 2 days. What have you found out so far?
Well, very, very difficult to resume in a short time because I've been here 2 days and it's fascinating. I'm going to be 10 more days. But one thing which I'm very jealous, which is of all the amazing products that Peru offers to the world, putting the products aside, they have this amazing synergy and between two worlds, the Asian-Japanese world and the Peruvian world, that they become one in this Nikkei cooking. It's very funny because I love history, and I said, wow, I wish we had this kind of synergies between Spain and an Asian country. The truth is that in the 1600s, 25 samurais from Japan arrived on a diplomatic mission to Seville, and they never left. They stay near Seville in a town called Coria, and it's over 3,000 people that their last name is Japón. So I think I want to do a restaurant where it's going to be what was supposed to happen if those samurais kind of impose more their traditions and their cooking. So this trip already has given me the idea of, okay, it didn't happen, but I'm going to recreate in the 21st century what happened if Spain had more of Japanese products and Japanese culture and what this Spanish Nikkei cooking will be. So that's why I'm very happy. I got a very good idea that I'm going to develop.
Now, we can't let you go without congratulating you on yet another award. You were named something just recently. Tell our listeners what it was.
Yeah, I feel a bit embarrassed, but it's the design award of the Hispanic Awards that were created by the White House in the 80s, next to Eva Longoria and others. I think it's an important moment, obviously, to be celebrating the Hispanic culture. We are in the middle of the immigration bill, and me as a Spanish guy in America and as a Latino, and about to become an American, we are weeks away. To me, I think it's good if we pass this immigration bill, because the kitchens of America are run by many, many Latinos. They should have the right to belong to the same society everyone else belongs.
Well, congratulations on becoming a U.S. citizen, joining me as yet another successful migrant. And thank you so much for talking to us. And we'll try and catch up with you before the end of Mistura and find out if you learned out anything else that's new. Thank you so much, Jose. And we'll have more chefs again right after the break.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Welcome back, and I think I'd like to just pause 1 minute in our array of stars here to say that we got so much more out of this trip to Lima than I ever expected, and that's because we had the assistance of this wonderful group called PROM, PROM Peru. And if you are thinking of going to Peru, and we're going to go back, and we will contact them again, let them organize your experience, because any questions you have, anything you're looking for, these people have it all at their fingertips, and they're nice, very nice people,
and
smart too.
And a personal thank you to Daniel Covera, who kept us all organized.
Yeah, and with a cheerfully too, he did it.
amazing young man. We
were okay, so they're moving on here.
Yeah, let's get back to the program here.
And we're moving on to Nuno Mendes from Viajante. And what do you have to say about him and Davide Scabin?
Yeah, who comes from Rivoli near Torino in Italy.
Yes. We caught up with them.
We did indeed, and we're getting a different viewpoint then as to why they went to Mistura and what they're taking home from it.
It's a curious experience to meet in Lima, Peru, at Mistura, a chef we have been trying to connect with in London, who also happens to be Portuguese. Figure that out, listeners, if you can. Chef Nuno Mendes from Viajante Restaurant in London is here contributing to the Chef's Congress at Mistura. And I wanted to ask him the same two questions I've been asking everybody else. Why did you come, and then what will you be taking away?
Well, it's a pleasure to be here. I've always, for a long time, ever since I started cooking and learning about food, I've always been very curious to come to Peru. I find that there's a country that has a very strong cultural identity in the kitchen, and has an amazing product, and an amazing chefs, and I wanted to come and see it. So it was when I was invited to come, it was an absolute honor. So we got to see, in the last 3 days that we've been here, 4 days that we've been here, we've eaten some amazing food, we've met amazing, incredibly talented chefs, and we learned a lot about the product that people here in Peru. And that's been a huge experience for us.
What have been the eye-openers? Has it been the Amazon ingredients, or has it been the fusion of Peruvian with Japanese? Which are the things that really stand out in your mind so far?
The product that we've seen, I mean, when we look at the different quinoas, different potatoes, I mean, the different, going to a place like Central, where we went to a couple of, yesterday, for instance, like in Virgilio, someone that I know from London already, we met in London, and seeing him at home and working with the products, with the traditional products from here, was incredible. That was probably like the, in terms of food, that was probably the highlight. But then, again, the ceviches, experiencing ceviches in the homeland, and looking at from the very traditional to the very modern interpretations of that, las causas, all that. It's been a fascinating lesson, no?
I mean, it is really startling to see ceviche in every kind of establishment you can imagine, when in London it's very specialized.
It is. I mean, when you try it in London, I've known ceviche for a while, and a lot of people claim to be doing the right ceviche there, but it's certainly very different from what you get here. The way, the freshness, I mean, it's really a part of the culture, so we can feel it,
Now you're learning about all these different ingredients, but except for quinoa, what ingredients would you be able to add to your repertoire with any kind of authenticity?
Realistically, I think, we could take more of the technique rather than the ingredients. So, I mean, obviously we see the ingredients, and we hope to one day be able to come and cook here again, actually do a dinner here, so we can use this ingredient. But the technique is fantastic. I mean, like, first, like learning how to make, leche de tigre, no? Which is the basics for the marinade. I mean, this is something that we can apply, to our fish, with our citrus. I mean, leche de tigre is almost like a formula in a sense, and you can actually adapt it.
What exactly goes into tiger's milk?
Tiger's milk, I mean, I guess it changes, there's several recipes for it, but typically it's the fish or seafood that is seasoned with an acidic citrus, and then sometimes with chilies or with different types of herbs, and the process of marinating, the time that it spends marinating actually breaks down. The product breaks down and it creates this amazing milk. It's got the texture of milk. It's a cloudy, a viscous sort of milky-like texture that carries all the flavor of the fish, of not just the fish, but of the product of all those three ingredients together.
I hated leaving any of it in the bowl. What are you supposed to do with it?
I think if they serve it to you in a proper bowl, you can just drink it at the end, There's no bread over here to soak it up in, but yeah, I mean, I can just... Drinking is always a great way to deal with it.
We mustn't close without asking Nuno to introduce his restaurant, which, curiously enough, is in the land of Portugal's oldest ally and England's oldest ally, in just outside, I think, the centre of London. So introduce us to that very quickly before we let you go off and do something else I know you've been doing here, which is meeting all your old friends and
I know there's a line of them waiting, so we'll let you go after you tell us a little bit about Via Gente.
Well, Via Gente was a project that we started 3.5 years ago, and it's Via Gente means traveler in Portuguese. Not traveling salesman, but traveling. They a traveler, and basically we brought all of our experiences, the places that you know, the chefs that we learned from, chefs that inspired us, places that I've traveled to. And we proposed in East London, which is an interesting part of London, which is very bohemian and very kind of modern, and it's a fun part of London. It's an up-and-coming area. We proposed a dining experience that is reflective of that showcases, that allows us to showcase all these experiences, and also challenges a bit the question of the formal dining, fine dining experience, you know, like the way our kitchen's set up, the way, you know, the fact that our kitchen is in the dining room amongst the tables. We have a menu that is completely secret. We only offer tasting menu, and it's a menu that the guests will not, that basically the guests don't know what they're having until they have it. So you know, a style of service that is very relaxed and informal, yet very professional. You know, where we also like offer a pairing of beverages that are inspired by our travels as well, and people and producers that showcase product. You know, like that have an interesting way to look at their product. So that's the story that we tell.
Another thing that struck me: are you going to collect rocks, different stones and coral to serve as serving pieces? The presentations are knockout.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I mean, all these rocks, I mean, they were made for us, so we didn't get a chance to collect them, but we like the idea you know, like working with textile with ingredients that have an interesting texture to them. And they carry the flavors and carry, you know, and they're rustic as well. I think they create a rustic feel to the way we played.
Well, we hope to see you next time we're in London. So, Nuno, wait for our email or a call, and then listeners will be able to give you a in-person report and find out whether or not Via Gente is exactly like Nuno describes it. But it sounds like a wonderful dining adventure, and we're certainly into wonderful dining adventures. So we're going to have that. And thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure. And lovely to meet you, and I hope you get a chance to come and visit us in Via Gente.
On my left is Davide Scabide, and on my right is
Joaquin de la Piedra.
Joaquin is from Peru, and Davide is from, not only from Italy, but from Torino. And you have a restaurant in Torino. Tell us the name.
The name of my restaurant is Combaldet Zero. It's very near to Turin in Rivoli, in the Museum of Contemporary Art, and it's a beautiful location.
But we had to come all the way to Peru to find you. So why are you here?
I'm here because I have a lot of interesting for the evolution of this nation, for the gastronomy, for the products from the chef. I think the Italian people is a long time who have a big gastronomy, and now it's coming a little bit sleeping, okay? And the Peruvian people are the a contrario.
He says that the Italian cuisine is more comfortable, and they are resting while the Peruvians are pushing towards new goals and exporting their cuisine.
But you're suggesting that Italians resting is not a good thing.
Quand les Italiens, la cuisine restaurant est endormi.
Dormir, I like that. Yeah, there.
Ils sont là qu'ils dorment parce que nous sommes pour c'est des siècles que nous sommes connus pour la cuisine et nous faisons pas plus beaucoup. Alors j'aime quand je trouve un nation comme c'est ça qui sont jeunes, s'il vous plaît, si vous voulez, Aussi, s'il a un vieux cuisine avec beaucoup de traditions, mais pas connu dans le monde. Et alors, c'est jeune pour la communication. Et alors, je dis que les Italiens, ils doivent regarder comme ils vont travailler une nation comme c'est ça. La promotion d'une nation, de la gastronomie, j'aime ça.
He says that the Italian cuisine is very well known over the past years, over the past centuries, and they have fallen asleep on their laurels, we can say that, while the Peruvian cuisine, which is dates back for many, many years, is now exporting its and making it known to other people in other parts of the world.
You know quite a lot of Peruvian chefs, even though you said this is the first time you have been in Peru.
Yeah, it's the first time, but I know Gaston, Virgilio, and come si chiama la chef del Cordon Bleu.
The interesting thing is that we were having lunch at Central with Virgilio yesterday, and we looked in the kitchen, yeah. and there was a gentleman with grey hair and a fine build who is obviously a chef in a strange kitchen. Why did you do that?
Normally, in the high level of the restaurant, it's not a strange kitchen because all the kitchen is the same. It's high level, and then all of the kitchen is a good organization. And then, okay, it's new, but after 2 hours, you stay home as at home because you have a friend who think all the do you need. And then have a good guys who work for you, and then you stay very well.
Was there a dish that you particularly enjoyed cooking and tasting on Virgilio's wonderful menu?
I you don't.
You were only cooking. You were not eating.
No. I cook and prepare.
You did not eat
for the demo, uh-huh. For the next big dinner in Gelinats. Uh-huh. But I don't eat yesterday. Okay, eat a sandwich because we work a lot.
Now we can.
I eat at the dinner in Sunday. Uh-huh. In Sunday. I stay at the table for the big menu degustation from Virgilio. And then if you want, Monday, I response you.
we can reveal the secret because this interview will broadcast after Gelinas. So tell our listeners, what are you going to do with octopus in a cylinder?
Oh, my idea is put the octopus in a plastic cylinder for make a cyber octopus. And then, because as the demo of today, I think the octopus is no event. Il n'a pas un bel aspect. Alors, c'est pas. Je dis que c'est pas un poisson en smoking. Alors, on va pas plus. Il s'est pas invité dans les grandes parties. Alors, j'avais travaillé sur les looks pour donner lui un relève.
He says that the octopus is not very appealing to the eye, and he's transforming the octopus into a black sci
fish.
He's working with a plastic cylinder and making the octopus appealing to the eye. It's making a very nice presentation.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us. We're very jealous. You live in Peru. You have access to such wonderful food. And we are glad to be sharing it with you for the first time. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
We featured several chefs from Lima in last week's program, but still there was another one that we couldn't include there, but the restaurant's name is Maita, M-A-Y-T-A.
Which I adored.
Yeah, the chef owner, Jaime Pezaque, is doing some really, really interesting things that you'll want to know about. And then there were another group of people who were there learning just as European chefs were, and North American chefs for that matter, a chef called Inez España, who came from Bolivia to find out what was new and great in culinary experiences with the intention of trying to develop the same kind of movement in her home country of Bolivia. So first of all, Jaime Pezaque, and then Inez España from Bolivia. Jaime, I'm not even going to try to pronounce your last name. I'm not even going to try to pronounce the name of your restaurant. We dined there the other evening. We had a wonderful exploration of Peruvian cuisine, but Peruvian cuisine from a special point of view. Jaime, tell us about that.
The thing is, the past year, we were traveling around Peru, searching some places, some products, and at the end of this study, we make our last tasting menu that I think is the best one, and I think as a restaurant, in this case, we grow. And the thing is, the concept, it means coordinates from Peru. So the thing is, we choose 9 places for Peru, not in an order, in a random, it's random. And the thing is, we choose the best ingredients on those coordinates and make our own dishes, our own concept. And the thing is, and the fun thing here is also that we pair this tasting menu with no wine at all. And the thing is, as you know, Peru is not a great wine producer. We're a great pisco producer, but the thing is, we make our own drinks, cocktails or sodas or something similar, with roots, with flowers, and with fruits, according from these coordinates. So every plate have their own with the same coordinates, you know.
Now we should mention, of course, the name of the restaurant. I won't pronounce it, but it's spelled Mayta, and your last name. So let's press in before we forget.
Yes, the name of the restaurant is Mayta, and we have one in Lima and one in Hong Kong. We just 5 months ago, and my last name is Pesaque. Pesaque. It's from Greek.
Now, it's really interesting. You said this is a new tasting menu for this year. You had a different tasting menu before that?
Yes, I changed the tasting menus every 4 months. It's the seasons. It's seasonal. But this time we travel a lot because we were like looking to a whole different concept of a tasting menu for us.
Yeah, this is a book, listeners. Yeah, you have to picture that this is a book with a sacking cover. And about 15 pages,
yes.
And just absolutely amazing introduction to what's going on ingredient-wise in this fascinating country. Now, your restaurant has been open for how long, Jaime?
We have 5 years now.
That's amazing, and it's a beautiful space. Did you do the design, or does it integrate some of your ideas?
Yes, of course. I think the restaurant have to be, you have to breathe the restaurant as you are, you know, as the same thing as you are. So you can be like, you're going to be there like more comfortable, and you can offer your proposed better, you know, and that's it. I change the restaurant because I think every 2 or 3 years you have to make some change, and I'm always there. I design too, so that's the fun part too for me.
Yeah, and to us, you brought out each dish yourself and told us what it was, but then your servers were so incredibly efficient. How did you manage to train them to do such a good job?
The thing is, the key for that, I think, is just communication, and communication. And we have meetings twice a day. So that's it, and you have to take care of them. They have to take care of you. So we're also friends. So we are. They are really professionals, and we see our profession with a really professional eyes there. So that's the key, I think.
Now to find out more, people can go to a website.
Yes, the website is www.maytarestaurantewithane@the.com.
And you're going to be speaking on this wonderful symposium of chefs later today. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us before you go do that.
No, thank you, and I hope you enjoyed my the experience at Maita, and everybody's invited, and the thing is, I want everybody to have fun.
It was fun, it was exciting, it was delicious. What more would you like to know? Thank you so much, Jaime. I don't know a lot about Latin American history, but one thing I do know is that once upon a time, there was a really big war between Peru and Bolivia. Despite that, we have found a chef from Bolivia here at Misturia in Lima, Peru. Inez España from Restaurant Inaz in Santa Cruz, Bolivia. You came to Misturia for a reason. I don't know what it was. So tell us about that, and then what you're finding out while you're here.
Well, as you said, my name is Inez. I come from Bolivia, and the most important thing for the Bolivians is that, you know, my country is not as famous as Peru, and I am sure that Bolivia has a lot of a potential in gastronomia, and that's why I'm here in Peru, to show the world that Bolivia is a beautiful and a big country.
And it's also mostly a very high country, as I recall.
Yes, it's very high. If you visit La Paz, you'll be surprised, very surprised. And the most important thing in the Bolivia is that we have the three ecosystems. So that makes us a great potential, because we have Amazonic food, we have Los Andes with quinoa, amaranto, chia, we have fishes, but not we don't have a sea, but we have a river with a lot of potential in fishes. And like 2,000 species of fruits, exotic fruits. And I want the world to discover Bolivia, because it's a small country, but with a great potential.
In a way, these ecosystems are very similar to the ecosystems in Peru, with the exception of the coastline, which, as I recall, is what the war was all about.
Yes.
But what have you found so far that you're going to take back? That's sort of new and exciting, and you sort of didn't know that before.
Well, a lot of techniques in cooking techniques that I can teach. I have a school, cooking school in Santa Cruz. So everything I've learned here in Peru, the way they use their ingredients, their products, the how they are using their products, that it's like contagious, you know? It's like a disease. So I want to go to Bolivia and try to tell my country how beautiful it is to use our own product. I think that's the best in Peru.
So right now what you're saying possibly is Bolivian chefs are really copying what chefs in the rest of the world are doing. And you're saying, no, let's not do that. Let's be best.
That's it. Let's be Bolivia. Let's cook with our products, that they are wonderful, and we are not using them. Because, you know, sometimes in the countries we prefer other products. We think the best is if we try the Peruvian products, Italian products, and we forget that everything is in our country. It's always better than the other because are near, so you can have them fresh, and that's important.
Well, we better let you go back to school to learn even more. So thank you, Inez. Thank you so much for talking to us. And I'm sure we'll be hearing your name in the future in the Bolivianization of Bolivia.
Well, I hope so. This is my first time in Mistura, and I was very excited when they invited me, because it was a great opportunity to show a little bit of my country. I hope I'll be...
And winding up today's program, a gentleman who I recognize, I
and
was
he
very
is
surprised.
Such a gentleman.
Yeah, and I was
gracious,
really surprised.
Gracious.
Yeah. Rick Bayless, who spends most of his time, in fact, all of his time, really, making sure that he's cooking authentic Mexican. But he came to Mistura for the first time, and here are his thoughts on that experience. Many of you know that you can recognize Peter from across the room because he has a white beard and snowy hair. I just recognize Rick Bayless because he still has a full head of hair the right color, but his mustache is a distinctive giveaway. Rick, how wonderful to find you here in Lima, Peru.
Oh, it's such a pleasure to be here. This is just one of the most amazing places on earth, especially if you're interested in food.
Well, I guess that's the theme. So if we weren't interested in food, we wouldn't come, would we?
No, not to this. It's Mistura. But I've been to a lot of food festivals in my life, and I have to say, this tops them all. And then when you eat in the restaurants and get to know the chefs that are here, there is such an incredibly active and talented and creative group of chefs here doing everything from traditional food to extremely creative food that I'm surprised that in the U.S., Lima is not one of the major food destinations. I know a lot of people think about, you know, traveling to Paris, or lately London has got itself really on the map for food. And lots of people will go to San Sebastian, say, in northern Spain, or Barcelona. But I have to say, they don't have any, none of those places have anything on Lima. It's really a remarkable place to come.
Yeah, they're really missing out, aren't they? Now, what has struck you the most? Are there some particular ingredients, or is it a style? What are you taking home that's really the most different?
It's a very interesting cuisine because it's based on a lot of ingredients that we don't know. And when you come to Peru, you have to come with your dictionary in hand, because you'll start reading menus and realize you're completely lost, that none of the ingredients that go into the sauces or the condiments or the accompaniments on the plate, in other words, all the fruits and vegetables and grains and starches, are all really different. And when you start tasting them, you realize that they create different textures. They have all of these Amazonian products. They have all of these products from the Andes. They have the other ones from the coast. And when you hear the chefs talk about it, they're very clear on where the ingredients come from and how they're used traditionally, which is what all of the contemporary chefs are working with. They understand those ingredients from a traditional standpoint, because you have to deal with them differently. Like, you, every product has its own special way that you deal with it. They know that, and then they're utilizing that as a jump-off place for contemporary food.
Are there any particular ingredients perhaps you're going to add to the dishes on the menu in your various establishments when you get back?
I wish I could say that I was, but in fact, the availability of most of the ingredients, especially in the fresh state, is just not there. Cocona, which is in the broader family of the tomato, is a very beautiful, acidic fruit, but they make a salsa-like thing out of it. That's like, I fell in love with it instantly. Now, the one thing that we can get a lot in our area in the Midwest is ground cherries. And they use a lot of ground cherries here, tons and tons of ground cherries. And so that's something I thought, man, we can utilize it. I saw the way they were utilizing it in so many different preparations that it encouraged me to go back and be more creative and think about more places that we can put it. Well, a lot of people don't realize that is the ground cherry is the first cousin to the tomatillo. And it's, in fact, what we consider the northern version, the native northern version of a tomatillo. It's sweeter than a tomatillo, but we've been playing around with that a lot for the last decade or so in the Midwest. But I just saw how much they use them here.
Now, it's funny. We haven't noticed that. Perhaps we just weren't paying attention, or we didn't realize that it was a strange ingredient, because we grow them in our garden.
Yes.
And I have them in my breakfast fruit in the morning, and they really are truly remarkable. Now, bring our listeners up to date, Rick, on your restaurant, shall we say, empire.
Well, I don't really think it's much of an empire, mostly because the three restaurants that I have are right next door to each other. So if you come to the block of Clark Street between Hubbard and Illinois, you'll find three restaurants, Frontera Grill, which is our sort of casual place that it's very rambunctious and everything's served family style, and it's a great place to come with a group. And then right next to that is Topolo Bampo, our fine dining place. And we 3 years ago added Shoko, which is a quick service place that really focuses on Mexican tortas. They're sort of a sandwich. We finish them in a wood-burning oven, and we have all kinds of really wonderful things. We have that, and then caldos, which are meal in a bowl soups. That's what the focus of that is. But what people have been talking about a lot recently, just because we have made our food accessible, is the airport food. And in the airports, we're doing tortas as well, just tortas, but we're using all local products, but obviously with the Frontera flavors. And to me, that's been really successful, because we have been able to bring the flavors that we're so famous for in Frontera to a really broad group of people with all natural ingredients and really delicious food.
I have this sneaking feeling that after your second trip to Mistura and the chef's symposium here in Lima, Peru, that there might be a Peruvian restaurant in Rick Bayless's future. Wouldn't surprise me a little bit.
I have to say that it would take me a decade or two to just understand the cuisine. It's that regional, that complex. I spent a bunch of time with Pedro Miguel here from Malabar and Amas, and just talking to him about the ingredients and how they're used. He's really, really an expert on the cuisines of the Amazonian basin. And I just realized how much there is to learn. My head was spinning. My head was really spinning. So I'm going to let these guys do their thing, and I'm going to continue to do what I do.
But you're enjoying yourself just like Peter and Anne are doing here. And I'm guessing maybe you'll be back next year.
I can't wait to come back next year. I told everybody, next year I'm going to bring some of my chefs down, because they all need to understand the complexity, richness, and beauty of this cuisine.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us, Rick. Are you going to the big thing tonight?
Definitely, I have to return to work, and I have to be back at work tomorrow morning, so I'm taking the overnight flight tonight.
Thank you once again, and please give our regards to Deanne. So we hope you enjoyed today's program.
I never got to talk about my sighting of the dancing potato.
Well, you can do it right now if you like.
I don't know what to say about it except that I saw it.
There was a dancing potato. There was also a dancing red pepper.
Yes.
And lots of dancing girls and boys as well.
With snakes and things.
It was really quite the event. This program, I'm sure, has been quite the event. We hope that you stayed with us all the way. We're a little longer than usual.
I can't wait to go back.
I thought the content was really fascinating. We will be back in Peru to bring you more Peruvian adventures sometime in the future, I have no doubt. But in the meantime, from now until next week.
Bye-bye.